And right now, we bring in the voice of your Dallas Mavericks, Chuck Cooperstein, to comment a little bit further. And Coop, we appreciate you taking a little time today. What were you doing around 1 a.m. last night?
It's funny. I was actually watching the earthquake coverage on CNN. And just was getting tired of it and flipped over for a second to ESPN to see what was up. And lo and behold, breaking news, and couldn't go to sleep after that for a long time. That was of the many stunning trades, free agent signings, combination of both, given the hour at which this went down, I'm not sure that I've ever seen anything quite like that in the NBA. And it's a truly extraordinary moment for the Clippers. It validates everything that they've tried to do since Steve Ballmer bought the team. There was some great general managing done by Sam Presti to extract 5 first-round draft choices in allowing that deal to go through, so that if they are indeed going to rebuild, and you know, who's to say that they're going to use all of those draft choices? I would tend to think that they wouldn't, that they can turn at least some of those picks into real live NBA bodies that can, if there is a rebuild, it softens the rebuild time significantly. You know, and obviously the Raptors are huge losers here, but the Raptors have a championship. They knew this was a possibility when they made the trade for Kawhi in the first place, and it wound up working out for them anyway.
Scoop, we talked yesterday. I was on with you 9-1 about the 5th of Kawhi. It was the 6th of Kawhi since it was after midnight. It will forever be known as the 6th of Kawhi. But we left the show talking about Coco Gauff and all that excitement, but this stuff here in the NBA with the 6th of Kawhi and him going to the Clippers changes the balance of power. The league is wide open like never before. You say you've seen nothing like this before, but we have a league that we've never seen before. Now it's a two-star league, and it's wide open.
Well, actually, when you think about it, this decade, there's been 7 different teams that have won a championship this decade. You know, that's pretty good.
But going into the season, we kind of figured who would be the teams. We don't know who the teams are.
Well, right, exactly. But the point is, I think the larger point is that, you know, everyone says, well, you know, we all know who's going to be the champion, you know, when the year begins. And really, the fact is you don't. And, you know, the Clippers look fantastic right now. I mean, they've got two obviously top 15, maybe even top 10 level players on their team. They got tremendous depth. They're extraordinarily well coached. You know, maybe they could use a little more help at point guard, although I'm not sure they really need that, given how much and how well both Kawhi and Paul George handle the ball to help out Patrick Beverley. You know, I don't see that being a huge issue for them, but I mean, it is extraordinarily wide open, and it's certainly on the western side of the bracket, you know, as we've talked about very often, more so as it relates to the Mavericks, and understanding that, you know, every game in the West matters. Every game in the West really matters here. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see how the Clippers handle both Kawhi, who obviously felt comfortable enough with the Clippers early on in the process to be able to do the Paul George recruitment, you know, just when he sits, when Paul George sits, you know, I mean, they'll always have at least one top flight small forward on the floor, if not two. But, you know, how does Doc Rivers manage that? That's one of the things I think we're all going to be looking at as the season goes on. Because, again, if every game is as important as we all seem to think it is in the West, it would behoove teams, I would think, to try to throw out the best roster they can throw out there pretty much every night.
Talking to Chuck Cooperstein here on the Sports Brunch. So many questions to try to squeeze in here, Coop, in such a little time. Two-parter here. Why did Oklahoma City seemingly give in so easily to the trade demand of Paul George? And do you see what Russell Westbrook being shipped out before this, let's say this time next year, do you think that he is going to be gone from Oklahoma City as well?
I could see that, you know, around this time next year. I can't imagine them doing something during the season. I mean, unless they're totally blown away. But again, you know, Russ has got a pretty big contract, and he's got a game that's that is very difficult to inculcate into a different system. I mean, you've got to adjust to him, and all the players have to adjust to him, and that takes time. I mean, so I don't see him being a mid-season trade. You know, I don't think the salary will really matter all that much. But I mean, you know, you just have to judge, you know, what you think of Russell Westbrook, and whether or not the, you know, how he plays is worth the trouble that it would take in order to get him, because it's not like Oklahoma City is going to just give him away. I'm sorry. And the first question was,
why did Oklahoma City give in to the trade demand to Paul George?
Well, I mean, I guess if you've seen the distractions of the last year with guys like Jimmy Butler and Anthony Davis, I could absolutely see why Sam Presti would not want to have that become public. And the fact that both the Clippers and the Thunder were they're buttoned up organizations anyway, but the fact that they were tightly sealed. Now, there was nothing coming out of them. And with Oklahoma City in general, there's nothing coming out of them. That they could do that, you know, makes it work. I mean, the longer the guy's there and the longer that it takes to make a deal happen, the greater likelihood is that something could leak. And again, that's the last thing that you want, because ultimately, if it leaks, then it affects Presti's bargaining position. And let's face it, I mean, he did great. All things considered, he did absolutely phenomenal in getting back what he got back.
Well, let's bring it home. Let's bring it home, because this is where you're great and where you are have the information. What does this mean for the Mavs? We talked about, you know, the Mavs been held hostage, Danny Green been held hostage while we waited for Kawhi, and now Green has chosen the Lakers, and the Mavs again are left empty-handed.
Well, I mean, there's the talk of an offer sheet for DeLon Wright of Memphis, who played really well against the Mavericks in the end of last year. I mean, and then overall, I mean, he had 3 triple-doubles in his last 5 games, and they were the first 3 triple-doubles of his career. I mean, I'm not sure if that means anything or not. But I do know that the Mavericks, back in 2015, when they drafted Justin Anderson, really liked DeLon Wright a lot. But Wright was taken the pick before by Toronto. So, that's something to consider, but Memphis has cleared out a lot of room, and you know it sounds like they're going to try to trade Andre Iguodala. Wright and Iguodala seem to be, you know, somewhat similar in how they play. So you know, I guess we'll see what happens there. Another guy that's kind of interesting to me is Jermichael Green, who wound up last year in you know, with the Clippers as well, as part of that deal with Memphis and Avery Bradley. You know, at the trade deadline. And Avery Bradley's a guy who, you know, could be in play, although his numbers overall really are not that great. But, you know, but Green's 6'9", he can shoot the ball. You know, is he a perfect roster fit, given that the Mavericks, you know, spent their money, you know, on Maxi Kleber, I think, to try to do the same thing that Green does? I don't know. But I do know Green guards people, and I do know that it seems like when he plays, he's a really – net positive player. But, you know, if you're looking for something big, guys, I think the only way it's going to happen is through trades. And usually, with the exception of the Jason Kidd trade back in 2008, when those trades happen, they come about like the Paul George trade happened last night, and you just don't know about it.
What about Kelly Oubre or even Iguodala coming here after Memphis moves on from him?
Iguodala, I would think, would try to sign with a team that's likely closer to winning a championship, which would be understandable. Kelly Oubre, I mean, I think that Phoenix, everything that Phoenix has done in the offseason seems to be with Kelly Oubre, keeping Kelly Oubre in mind.
Okay.
Now, if you know, if you want to significantly overpay for Kelly Oubre, I mean, listen, the Mavericks have $23 million in cap space. I mean, they could throw together something really huge. I like Kelly Oubre a lot, and I think he improved a lot once he was traded from Washington to Phoenix. I thought he was really, really good, you know, from January 1st on. I wouldn't discount it, but at the same time, I'd be very surprised that given what Phoenix has been trying to do, and you can laugh at what they're trying to do. Oftentimes you scratch your head, but I think they do like him a lot. He's young, but I mean, he would be phenomenal, I think, if you could get him, but I just don't think you can get him. But I think at this point, it's not a bad idea for the Mavericks to try. I mean, I would think I would much prefer trying to do something like that than DeLon Wright. But that's just me, because DeLon Wright's really, his inability to shoot, I think, is a big problem.
Why is Marcus, and last thing here, Coop, why is Marcus Morris not more on the radar for the Mavericks whenever he seems to fit most everything that they're looking for? It doesn't seem like there's been any serious talk in that regard. And it's like, it seems like I'd rather throw out a nice offer for Marcus Morris as opposed to waiting on Danny Green and then being left at the altar like they usually are.
Well, I mean, I guess they can look at Marcus Morris and Jermichael Green somewhat similarly. And decide on which one you like. I mean, certainly they can take them into cap space. I mean, but neither one of those guys, I think, is going to get a huge offer by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't have a problem with that, DJ, but I don't have a good answer. I don't know, you know, what would be lacking in that case, because, you know, it seemed to me, and I'm sure you saw it too, you know, when Boston in the playoffs, you know, Morris is a guy not afraid to mix it up. You know, he can shoot the ball a little bit. He's got some, you know, again, feistiness in his game that I think the Mavericks would really like to have. So, I mean, I would imagine that on some level that he would be, on the radar. But I think, you know, maybe the Mavericks are going to do a couple of things here. One, okay, circle back and, you know, reevaluate, you know, things that maybe they had on the table, things that we don't even know about, you know, right now, and see if those things are still workable for them. Okay, you know, can they do something like that? You know, and on the other hand, you know, maybe guys that automatically, as free agency began, you know, it was a hard no for them. Now that the dust has settled on free agency, they take a second look at it and think, you know, maybe we can live with that. I think that's kind of where they are right now. And I know for Maverick fans, it's extraordinarily frustrating. There was, you know, such incredible hope with all that cap space and, you know, having already really achieved their ultimate goal of getting a second star in here with Porzingis, that there were going to be big things that went down. And unfortunately, it didn't happen.
Hey, man, we appreciate it. This Saturday, your day off. I thank you for coming in on short notice and giving us the inside information on the Mavs, man. Thank you much.
Appreciate it, boys. Take care.
There goes Chuck Cooperstein, voice of the Mavs, filling you in a little bit on his thoughts on what was a monster night in the NBA last night.
And Coop was usually positive on the Mavs, but he couldn't even spin this. He couldn't spin this positively.
No, it's just, it's just another example how the Mavs seem to be used as leverage. They seem to be the second, third option. And, at some point they're going to break that cycle, you would think, just because the odds just say eventually it's going to happen. But today is not that day.